Hey loves, it's Ashley Angelina, your favorite host on the East Coast, and welcome to Black, Bold, and Beautiful, the podcast for the culture. Be sure to enter those Q&As for a chance to be entered into all of the drawings. Thank you for tuning in as always. Be encouraged, stay encouraged, and don't forget to encourage someone. Without further ado, we're going to go ahead and get you over to your episode. Enjoy! Hey loves, it's Ashley Angelina, your favorite host on the East Coast. Welcome to Black, Bold, and Beautiful, the podcast for the culture. Good evening, Taria. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm doing well. Thank you for joining us tonight. First episode of the year, so I'm very excited about it. Do you want to go ahead and just introduce yourself to the listeners and viewers?
Yes, my name is Saraya Johnson. I am 39 years old. I currently reside in Tennessee. I am a breast cancer survivor. I'm also a licensed social worker. And that is it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I do appreciate it. I wanted you to come on because you are someone that I see to be a very strong individual who has had a couple of things thrown your way, and you've come through that flawlessly. And I think you are the epitome of strength. So I wanted to have you come on because this episode is wrapping up, and it's all about, you know, mental health strength that Black women have to endure, things that we go through that we have to just kind of muscle through and keep it going. Yeah. So I definitely want to sit down and just have a conversation with you about a couple of things. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm all excited. Now,
me too.
I know that, well, where we will start is what took place first, which is you losing your dad. Can you kind of, you know, walk us through, you know, how that was for you, What, you know, what mindset that put you in, maybe, you know, the journey to his end, and how you still, you know, thrive to make sure that he is still alive in, you know, in spirit.
So my father's passing was very, very detrimental and life-changing for me. Losing my father, that was a big loss. I've never experienced loss prior to my father's passing. So, and with him being my parent, with him being, you know, I'm a daddy's girl, you know, I loved and adored my father. My father was the love of my life. And to lose him was painful and heartbreaking. My father passed away at the age of 64 to colon rectal cancer. He was diagnosed officially in July, and he passed away Labor Day, September 6th of 2016. It's so crazy because, you know, growing up, you think your parents are just going to just be with you. You know, they're not going to go anywhere. It was almost, it wasn't until when he passed away that I thought, you know, he was immortal. You know, and to come home after leaving the hospice facility and just him not being here, his presence, you know, was no longer felt in the home. It hit me. It hit me. Even, you know, there's, even when I received the news that, you know, he was in hospice and he was imminent, there was still a lot of denial there. I remember I was in Tennessee. I was in the last semester of grad school. I was getting my master's in social work. I was in my last semester of grad school when all of this happened, and it just happened so fast. I remember the hospice nurse calling me and explaining to me how my mom, she just couldn't be the one to give me the bad news. She wanted her to do it. So I just remember leaving Tennessee, hopping on a plane, coming down to Florida. And in my mind, you know, the whole time I was traveling to see him, it was just this denial, like, okay, everything is going to be okay. You know, everything is going to be okay. I was mentally just preparing myself for what I was about to see and what was about to happen. And I remember going into the facility with my suitcase. You know, I literally had just hopped out of a plane. I said, I'm not coming home. I'm just going to stay here, you know? So I came in and I saw him, and he just didn't even look like himself. You know, the radiation and the chemo just had taken a big toll on just his overall appearance. And that's when it just hit me. So I was very fortunate to have spent time with him and been at his side, you know, when he passed away. We listened to music, we jammed out to the point where, you know, I knew he was just slowly, I was starting to witness the death and dying process, you know. I had read about it and learned about it, you know, within my education. But to just witness it was
different.
It was very difficult. So, you know, when he passed and everything, and just coming back to this empty what I felt was just empty. It's like I just haven't been the same ever since. It losing a parent, it's been what, 7 years? I think it'll be 7 years this 8 years maybe. I don't know. And that's another thing about death and dying. Eventually, you know, that date, you know, that's another story. But, you know, I don't know. It's some things that you just can't even put into words. You know, you have to experience that to you know, kind of understand. But just ever since his passing, it always felt to me like something was missing, you know.
Yeah.
All the sentimental moments that you may have afterwards, it's just like, dang, it's just that one thing that's missing, you know.
Yeah.
But I hope that answers your question. But yeah, it was definitely life-changing. It's definitely life-changing. And you know, I came out of it very appreciative, because I think one of the big lessons I learned from my father's passing was that he taught me to live without him, you know.
Right.
He taught me to still thrive without him.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because he taught me so much, you know, as a little girl to the 30 something year old woman that I was when he passed away. So yeah. I take those life's lessons that he taught me, and I still apply it to my life to this day. It's right. Hard. It's so hard to get to the point where you no longer cry when you think of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You will always feel the sting of their passing, but to go from, you know, crying when you hear their name or see their picture to actually smiling, is definitely a sign that, you know, you have overcome. You will always grieve, but you definitely will overcome.
Absolutely. It definitely merges you into a different version of yourself. I think because in losing a parent, you have to tap into strength you didn't know you had.
Mm-hmm.
And with that comes a lot of different things.
Yes.
And I think, you know, initially when it's first and it's fresh, it's like crying all the time. Like, you can't see any positive in it. It's just like, I just don't understand why things had to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like you said, with time, it's not like, you know, people say with time you heal. That's not true, because, you know, even years later, you're always going to have that moment where you just need to cry, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But just the little moments, like, you know, like you said, their favorite songs or like holidays, like, for me, doing my tree myself, like, I don't want help with it, because that's something me and my mom did. So I put on a playlist, like, you know, my mom loved music. She was just a free person. So I just have a playlist that I put together that I know are like all her favorite songs. And I listened to that, and I put that tree together myself. But that was like me spending time with her. That's amazing, because I wasn't always able to thrive in that spot and then continue my day. Normally, that's it. Like, I'm done. But being able to move forward and saying, you know what, I could be sad, or I can make this a moment of, you know, her memory, and just live life the way I know that she would, or the way that your dad would want you to live it. You know, ultimately, you know, they don't want us to walk around moping and sad, but to live, you know, live the way they would live if they weren't here. So I definitely understand that. It's definitely hard.
It's very hard. And one thing that I do religiously since his passing is on the day his passing anniversary, you know, I make sure I do something to celebrate, you know, to celebrate them. And my father loved Waffle House. So every year on September the 6th, I go to Waffle House and I have me an all-star with a sweet tea, you know. I just do little things. I just do little things to celebrate them. And that's what gets you through it. That's what definitely gets you through it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. My thing, I think, I was already very much a music lover. I think, but I have a stronger love for music now because that was my mom's favorite thing, was music, to dance and have a good time. So I really enjoy music. Definitely songs I know that she listened to when I was younger, or, you know, like family functions, stuff like that. Her favorite songs. I appreciate those a little more. So I definitely get that. Now, I know that, you know, your dad has transitioned. You said you had to come, you were in the middle of ending school. Now you have to merge back into school. How did that go? What was that dynamic like?
Ooh, it was rough, but my mindset had changed. And when I say my mindset, like, grad school is hard enough. Grad school is hard enough, but I felt like after my father passed away, it was like fuel, you know, it was fuel, because my graduation was May the 12th, and my father's birthday was the day after graduation. Wow. You know, so I just felt like, Saraya, you gotta push through this, girl. You gotta push through this, because, like, I just look forward to that day, you know. Yeah. I look forward to his birthday, because I knew if he were alive, you know, he would have been at my graduation with me, celebrating with me. And then, you know, the following day, we would have been celebrating him, right? You know, on his birthday. So it was just this different kind of just endurance and strength that I had to pull from, because that was just my focus. That was my finish line, because I wanted to finish it, and I wanted to finish it and celebrate him, even though he was not there with me, but it made it even more bigger to finish it, to finish strong.
Yeah.
And to persevere despite, you know, having to go through grief. Yeah. You know, as I was wrapping up that semester.
Now, after losing your father, did you go out and, like, do therapy? How did you manage to get through those, you know, tough, like, first weeks, first months, the year mark? Mm-hmm. How did you get through those moments? Did you do therapy, or was it like just a self-help type thing?
I did not do therapy. I just really relied on my faith. I relied on my faith. Definitely grief will also, for me, my father's passing and grief really turned me to become closer to God, you know, because grief will also take you down a very, very deep, dark road. Yeah. And to the point where you can only pull from God.
Yeah.
You know, there were days that I did not want to get out of bed. There were days where I cried. There were days where I was angry. Mm-hmm. And I told God how angry I was. You know, why did you do this? Why did you take him away from me? I don't understand. And I just had to just let those emotions just come out. You know, he was my way of just, you know, just expressing myself.
Right.
Through prayer, through worship, through just reading my word more. It forced me to learn scriptures because I had to meditate on those scriptures.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
to keep a sound mind. But one thing I can honestly attest to is God will comfort you during those tough times.
Like no other.
There has been times when he gives you like these signs. For example, before my father passed, I never saw a cardinal before. Mm-hmm. I would never see them. A red cardinal and like a Blu-ray, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I may be getting them wrong, but I never saw those birds. And I happened to be talking to a friend of mine, and she asked me how I was doing. And I was just like, man, you know, one day I literally had woke up and I saw a red cardinal like on my balcony of our apartment one day. And I was telling her about that, and she was just like, do you know what that means? You know, like research what cardinals, like when you see one of those, what that means. And I researched it, and that and what the web said was it means one of your deceased loved ones is visiting you, you know?
Yeah.
So it wasn't until after my father's passing that I saw those birds all the time, and they were close, you know, they were close to me. And, you know, like little things like that would just comfort me. There was another thing where, you know, I could be thinking about him and maybe his favorite song would come on or something like that. And so I kind of just took that as God just comforting me, you know, just comforting me and letting me know, Saraya, you know, your father is with me. You know, he is no longer suffering.
Right.
You know, I have him. I am God. I am still in control, and you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And I am going to hold your hand through this, you know?
Right.
So just things like that.
Yeah. There was times when, you know, I was dealing with losing my mom. I know that, you know, like once the funeral is over, everybody's kind of going back to their norm. Your norm isn't norm anymore. And similar to you, I would see like butterflies all the time. So I would see like they were laying in my window, or, you know, like if I'm out just sitting, like one would come laying next to me. That, and then her favorite thing was feathers. And I would always I was playing a softball game. I think I found like two or three feathers out there playing softball. Or like me and my best friend were out one day and she's like, it's a feather. And I was like, yeah, I wasn't really thinking about it. She was like, no, this mom, this a feather, this her. She letting us know that she here. Well, I was like, okay. Yeah. She was like, oh, and I said, no, you keep it. I have some. But like you said, those small moments, and I think it comes at the right time. Like when I find
myself
feeling down or focusing on the fact that she's not here, I can't call her. I think those are like moments that you hold near and dear. And like you said, you know, without God, without prayer, without faith, I don't know where I'd be. And I know like when I was younger, I'd be like, oh, that's really cliche. Like people always say, I don't know where I'd be without God. But like literally, I don't know where I'd be. I had to put me a playlist together. I had to, like, say, get me a couple of scriptures and meditate on them. I now wear all three of those one, two, and three scriptures on my arm always. I don't care if it goes in my outfit or not. I'm going to wear them. But these are three scriptures that have truly gotten me through. Favorite scripture is always going to be Jeremiah 29:11. Always going to be my favorite. But having those things get you through, it's just a different type of something. And then, like you said, draws you closer to God. And my relationship now is just so much deeper than what it was before. And I know it's like really, it's like really major, but sometimes it takes that thing, like that magnitude of something, for him to get our attention, unfortunately. Like, it's not like, oh, I'm taking your parents so you can be closer to me, but it takes something major like that for us to just like go back to the drawing boards. We're like, Lord, I don't know how I'm gonna get through this one.
Yeah.
Because I declare the first 2 weeks of going, trying to merge back into work and school and being a mom, being a wife, I would sleep. I would go to work and cry all day. And then I would come home and cry all day and go to sleep. That's what I did for 2 weeks. And then I realized, listen, sister, if you don't get it together, you're going to be on the other side of dirt too in a minute, because stress is going to take you out.
Yeah.
And now your kids have to feel what you're feeling. And if I have anything to do with it, I want to do my best to be my best to be around for my kids. But it's definitely tough. It's definitely tough. Yeah. So I commend you, because it's tough.
I commend you too.
Yeah.
I commend you too.
Now, what would you say, how did you address like the emotional impact of losing your dad? Like, how did you address it? Like those emotional impacts that it took outside of prayer. Did you, you know, come home more often? Did you call your sister? Did you, like, outside of, I know you said you did Waffle House. I know you said, like, prayer and your friends. Were there any, like, support groups? Were there, like, times outside? Are there any other things you did outside of, like, Waffle House to help you get through?
No. You know, when I think about the timing of it all, I was very busy because I was in school, you know. He passed away in September. And my semester was over in December. So from September to December, I was in school. And, you know, now that I think about it, I was not working. Mm-hmm. I wasn't working. So I commend you, because I could not imagine having lost my father in grad school and working and being a mom, you know, and, you know, like, I could not imagine. You know, you are so strong. And for everyone, I commend everyone who has had to balance those roles all while they're grieving. Just shows so much strength and so much perseverance and so much resilience, you know, because that is a lot. But I just remember, you know, I wasn't working at the time. I was a full-time student. So whatever, you know, I was just trying to get through school. Of course, I was married, you know, my husband and I know I would, my husband checked on me a lot, just not checked on me, but just mentally checked on me, you know, to see how I was doing. So that definitely helped. And I had to, I want to say, if anything, it encouraged me to communicate more.
Yeah.
You know, it really forced me to be more in tune with my emotions and making sure that I'm not harboring anything, you know, just making sure I'm not isolating myself and making sure I'm communicating what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, even if it was, you know, happy, sad, frustrated, angry, just it really forced me to just be able to communicate. And I would sometimes just say, I think it was one time, Derek and I, me and my husband, we were coming back from the grocery store and we were sitting in the car, and I was just like, you know, if we're sitting on the couch just watching TV, mm-hmm. and I just get up and, you know, and I, you know, just get up and kind of just walk away, you know, it's just know that I just need a moment to myself.
Yeah.
I just need a minute, you know, I just need a minute, you know, yeah. you catch me, you know, and I'm angry, I'm frustrated, or I'm crying. Just let me just feel. Experience that moment. I just want you to just support me and comfort right. me through that, you know? So definitely communication. Definitely yeah. communication.
It definitely, I think for me, being in school currently for becoming a mental health counselor, it has not only helped me with my own mental battles, but it's helped me to cope with my mom's death, because like you said, the class Death and Dying helps you better understand it from different perspectives. So I think I'm in a space now where before I would not allow myself to feel like, Ashley, you can't be sad, like you got kids. No, like you need to allow yourself to feel and go through it, because if not, it's just getting pushed down, suppressed, and then eventually it comes out as something else, and that's not even that thing. It just happened mm-hmm. to come out then. So I've allowed myself to just stop. And if crying is what I need to do, cry. If I stop and I want to laugh, I do that. There are days that I get up and say, you know what? I'm going to see my mom. And I go out there and I cry and I talk my little trash to her. Because, girl, what would you think of dying? Like, this, you just left me out here by myself and I don't appreciate it. But, you know, I go out, I talk to her like I would talk to her if she was here with me physically. I talked to her about things that I'm going through if she was with me physically, and those things helped me get through. So I've realized that, like you said, being able to communicate and say, hey, now is a good time. And luckily we have spouses that understand that me getting up and walking away, it's not a you thing. It's a me thing. Mm-hmm. It's a me needing to get to allow myself to be, I mean, feel how I need to feel without affecting us and without affecting you. I just need a minute. And after my minute, I'll be okay. But just give me a minute.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes, let's merge over. Take us back to the moment. Well, let's say what was the thing that caused you to go, you know, do your checkup where you were diagnosed with breast cancer?
So I've been getting mammograms since my early 20s. Every year I would just go for my mammogram. My mother, even before I was going for mammograms at a young age, my grandmother, Sadie Kitt, she passed from breast cancer at the age of 84. Mm-hmm. And then my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. I do not know the year. I can't recall the year. I do know the day, because she told us on New Year's Day of whatever that year was. So I have my grandmother passed away. My mom then being diagnosed with breast cancer, and she went through chemo radiation and overcame it. I just knew that I just had to make sure this was something that I had to make sure that I checked up on throughout my life every right. year.
Right.
And I did just that. I did just that. And during those checkups, I learned that I need more than your average mammogram. Mm-hmm. I had dense breast tissue. Mm-hmm. So on a mammogram, it may appear as if there's something there, which mm-hmm. will then have to lead to an ultrasound, mm-hmm. which then leads to an MRI.
Right.
So that was my checkup. Mammogram, ultrasound, MRI. Then there was this one year where my doctor was very concerned. It was in my left breast at the time. And it turned out that there was something there, but it was benign. They put the markers in there just to kind of keep an eye on those tumors. And then I just kept going, you know, my annuals. Mm-hmm. But life got busy and right. I ended up missing 2 years mm-hmm. of not getting my mammogram. And then the pandemic happened.
Right.
On top of that.
Yeah.
So all this time had passed. And I just happened to be laying in bed. And me and my dog, we cuddle at night. So my dog is sitting on my chest, and usually she will just lay her head on my breast. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, she just wouldn't. And mm-hmm. I was just like, Lola, I said, just lay down. She would not lay down. And mm-hmm. I just so happened to kind of like put her head down on my breast. And I kind of like felt, you know, something. And mm-hmm. you know, and that's another thing, you know, you can do your examinations in the shower, but you can also do your examinations in the bed when you're laying flat. So I noticed this area or whatever, and I'm like, okay, you know, I'll get it looked at. And that's what it was for like some months. I'll get it looked at. But it wasn't until I found out that a cousin, a maternal cousin, had breast cancer. Our cousin.
Yeah.
And then I found out that we had another cousin that was experiencing breast pain and discharge. And it just didn't sit in my spirit. Yeah. So I was just like, you know what? It's been years. Let me go check mm-hmm. in. So I checked in with my PCP. I told her what was going on. She ordered tests and everything. And I just remembered I contacted her in March and May. I did all my tests. And on May 26, 2001, I was diagnosed with stage 1B breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So one thing I learned throughout that process is to stay consistent. Make sure you are diligent with getting, you know, your yearly checkups and everything. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long I don't know how long it was there, you know, because I wasn't doing my exams and everything. I'm just grateful that it was just a stage 1B, you know?
Right. Because it could have been much further.
Yeah, it could have been. It could have been.
I think for me, it's adamant, you know, to get tested, you know, every year. I do have a lump in my left breast, but I've had it since I've had Kamari. It's benign, but I have to do ultrasound, I have to do the mammogram, and that, you know, every year. And listen, if it hurt half of a minute too long, I'm going to my doctor. I know she gets sick of me, but baby, listen. And my heart is like, listen, my aunt has died from breast cancer. You know, my aunt has been diagnosed with breast cancer. She beat it. I have had cousins that have had, you know, breast cancer. They beat it. You know, so I want to be careful because I'd rather catch it early than to try to catch it at the end and try to reverse. That's a lot.
Yeah.
But what I want to ask is, what was, how was your support system around you, and how did it contribute to your emotional and physical well-being during that time?
Oh, my support system was amazing, you know.
And I know it was.
Yes. My support system was, I remember the first person I told was my husband, and he was devastated, you know, devastated. And I told my mom, and I know she was devastated. I think she tried to, you know, I'm strong.
Muscle up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I know it devastated her, you know, because she told us, I'll never forget that day. She told us that she had breast cancer, and she probably would have never thought that her daughter, you know, would walk those same shoes, walking her shoes one day. So definitely my family. Oh, my family. I love my family so much. They were there. They were definitely my fight club, because, you know, and then it comes to a point, and speaking of fight club, I felt, man, it's just like going through this, you know, like to lose, you know, our aunt, then to have other cousins experience the same type of complications, and to have another, you know, cousin get breast cancer, and she beat it. You know, she's doing well. And then it's just like, this has to stop, you know, because now it's trickling down to like generations. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, no, this has to stop. So I really do. I'm really grateful for my husband, my mom, my sister, my family, my cousins. It's just like we all just rallied together to just say, you know, they all rallied around me and my besties, you know, my besties. Everyone just rallied around me and just prayed for me. I felt their prayers. But support is huge. It's huge when you're battling any type of illness or disease. Support, it impacts you, you know, physically, psychologically, mentally, emotionally. I mean, it plays a huge role in your healing process.
Absolutely.
And your recovery as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you elaborate on the self-reflection and personal growth in your healing journey?
I think for me, just the self-reflection, I didn't know how strong I was until I was diagnosed with breast cancer. It's scary.
Yeah,
it's scary.
You never know which way it'll go, you know.
Yes,
everybody's different.
Yes, and to have, you know, you can, you know, if you have a cold, you know, you can just take some medicine. You know, you kind of know what to do. You know,
right.
You
can just
you can take a Tylenol to break a fever. You can take some NyQuil, you know, or some DayQuil to break a cold, or you can just simply just sweat out a cold. But cancer?
Yeah.
That right there, you don't have control. You don't have control. Because cancer is going to do what it wants to do. You know, it's, you have no control over it. So, I had to realize that this was something that was beyond my control. And this is something that, once again, I needed only God for.
Yeah.
You know, I needed only Him for. that a self-reflection is definitely, I didn't know how strong I was. And thank God for my professional background in social work, you know, because I work in healthcare and it can be extremely difficult navigating the healthcare system, you know, and I'm glad that I could definitely tap into those professional skills, those experiences that I just had as a social worker helping my clients to navigate through. Right. So when I was diagnosed, it was quite overwhelming because, you know, my primary care doctor was just like, okay, you need to find you, or I'm going to, of course, she was helpful in getting my medical team together, but she was just like, look, you know, from this time on, you know, I had to go from just having a PCP to having an oncologist, a breast surgeon, an oncologist, a breast surgeon, who else? A plastic surgeon, you know? Like, it's very overwhelming. And, you know, you don't want any of these doctors to be, you know, inexperienced. You know, you want the best of the best.
Absolutely.
So I definitely had to put my faith in God when choosing different providers, you know, to help. And, you know, my primary care provider, she was so amazing in just helping me and helping me to navigate and choosing the providers that I did have to help me with this journey. Actually, I hope I'm answering your questions.
No, you are.
I hope I'm answering your questions, girl.
No, you're fine. So my question to you is, were there any life lessons or insights gained from your experience that may resonate with others going through similar challenges?
Yeah, definitely. I remember my first day of chemo. My first day of chemo was very insightful. It was a long day. I was almost done. I think I had to show up at like 9 o'clock. I did not leave until like 3. I had like a 6-7 hour infusion. So we got halfway through it, and I have my lunch. And my husband goes to get his lunch and I fall asleep. And I wake up and I see about 75% of all the patients that were on the floor getting chemo was Black women.
Yeah.
I just remember waking up from that nap, and everywhere I turned, in front of me, on the side of me, behind me, it was nothing but Black women on that floor getting chemo. And
this is a topic, but something I realized is, the next time you go on Publix, I want you to see, just kind of pay attention without being, you know, weird, but pay attention. When you go in, go into the deli area and tell me how many times you see a Black woman go to the ice machine compared to how many times you see a Caucasian woman go to, or a Caucasian individual, or anybody outside of the Black culture go to the ice machine. I was in the market, and I know this is off topic, I bring that up because I have an addiction type. I know that is because I am anemic and I know it is not healthy for me. Mm-hmm. I have been doing better. I have not had ice all year, and that's 14 whole days of no ice. However, in the beginning of the year, like probably around New Year's time, Anthony and I went to Publix, and he was getting some ingredients, and you know, I just kind of stood there and just kind of walking. I mean, you know, looking around and seeing, just paying attention. And no exaggeration, at least 3 to 4 Black women in less than 10 minutes went to the ice machine. And they didn't get little cups. They got the huge cups.
Mm-hmm.
Huge cups of ice. Not one cup, sometimes 2 cups. 3 cups, 4 cups. Some people come out with like armfuls of cups of ice. And I'm like, that's crazy. But just like you realize that it was mostly Black women on that floor. As Black women, we have to understand those things and just try to be better and more adamant. When I say that, nobody ever prepares for cancer, but make sure you're going to those annuals. Make sure if you feel something, tell your doctor. And I think some people are just like, oh, you know, I don't want to keep going to the doctor. Baby, run it up. If something's wrong, that's who you need to go see. If you feel a lump, you need to go. If it hurts, go. If it's abnormal, something you haven't felt before, it's different. You know, you get your cycle and your breasts get tender. That's different opposed to it's hurting and you know your cycle is nowhere near, you know, getting ready to start. You need to see. You need to see. You need to check in.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes I wonder if just like mental health is a taboo thing, well, has been a taboo thing for a little while, I kind of feel like going to a doctor for a regular checkup is kind of taboo in the Black community as well. But we have to do better because we're losing a lot of people to cancer.
Yeah. 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 And when I did notice that, it was just that why, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was my first day of chemo, and that was the only thing I could think about, why there were so many Black women on the floor getting chemo.
Yeah.
I could not get that out of my head. So I did some, I did some research, and Black women are being diagnosed with breast cancer at alarming rates, because I did not know that breast cancer used to be known as the white woman's, you know, disease.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, but now it's affecting all races, specifically and not just Black women.
And not just women, because you know that we had an uncle to die from breast cancer.
Yeah.
And that exactly. To me was absurd. Like, he's a guy, you know, like he's a man. So how's that?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was losing him, realizing like, oh, it don't have no particular person. Like, it's just
no.
It's what, yeah.
Yeah. Cancer does not go towards a specific demographic, you know, like
it doesn't play.
I mean, yes, it's, you have no control. You have no control, but it's definitely, and I still to this day would like to, if I had more time to really research, why is that? You know, why is that? It could, and there can be a lot of factors, you know, socioeconomic factors, you know, access to care, you know, it could be a lot of factors.
Yeah.
That contributes to that. And one day I will definitely devote my time towards being more knowledgeable about that and seeing how and my knowledge to helping that specific population just learn the importance of making sure you stay on top of, you know, and being diligent about getting your mammograms and absolutely, just your physicals and everything. Another thing that was very insightful is genetic testing. You know, a lot of people, when women are diagnosed with breast cancer, then there's this talk of genetic counseling and the BRCA gene, BRCA1, BRCA2. You know, I know for me, I had genetic counseling and I did not have the BRCA gene. I did not have BRCA1 or BRCA2, but I did have two variants. I did have two variants. They were of unknown significance, but one of those variants was associated with neuroblastoma. And the other variant was associated with breast cancer, but it was also associated with stomach cancer.
Got it.
So I just learned that. And that is scary.
It is.
If you think about our family.
That's what I was about to say.
Everybody has passed away of some type of cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because even with my mom, she had lung cancer and brain cancer. Mm-hmm. And then I know Auntie Betty had a brain cancer. Mm-hmm. I know like Uncle Larry died from cancer. I know Auntie Gladys died from cancer. I know Uncle Junior died from cancer. You know, so that is what scares me and puts a lot of fire under my behind, because I'm like, I just don't know, you know, which way it could come. And it's not like, you know, oh, well, it's just breast cancer. It's like, no, because we've had different cases for different people. And exactly. I'm just convinced that cancer is just something that literally I feel like it runs in our family. I hate to say that, but I really, we have to be careful, because granddaddy too had some sort of cancer as well. So we just have to be, you know, very careful and very, you know, purposeful when it comes to making sure that we get checked up and all, like, do the blood work. I know we don't like to be cooked. I know we don't like to do the extensiveness, but do the blood work. You have to do it. Recently went to the doctor, and I think something was either one time it's something was low and then one time something was high. So she's going to send me to a hematologist, and she's just like, you know, I don't want you to freak out. I'm like, I'm not freaking out, because Jesus got the last say so, but I'm going to go, and I'm going to go to every test you schedule me to go to. And if I find that there's a test that we did not do that we should have done, I'm going to request it. Because you just have to, luckily I have a doctor that is very patient. She's very thorough. Like, it's just, I love her. I love everything about this lady, because she is on it. If you complain about it, she's going to make sure that you're taken care of. She'd rather go through it and it be nothing than not do it and it's something. So I appreciate
it. And that's a good, And that's another thing too, with navigating healthcare. You know, you have to make sure that your providers, these doctors that you're going to see, you know, you have to make sure that, you know, you want to have a good relationship with them. Absolutely. You know, if you sense something that's not right, or is a little off, you know, they're a little bit too passive about something, it's okay to switch providers. It's okay.
It's nothing personal.
Yeah, it just didn't work out. You know, you have to feel good, and you have to put a lot of trust in your healthcare providers. That's huge too. You know, that is huge.
You have to advocate for yourself.
Exactly. And that's another thing. You definitely have to advocate for yourself. And being a woman, you know, advocating for yourself in healthcare, can come off, oh, you know, she's just dramatic, or, you know, or she's, you know, it's, we can go into, you know, other things, other topics when it comes to that, but definitely advocating for yourself and, and unapologetically, you know, advocating for yourself is huge. It's huge. Absolutely. Because navigating healthcare as a Black woman, especially being a Black woman with breast cancer, can be extremely intimidating. Ask the right questions. Right. You know?
Now, what message of hope and inspiration do you have for listeners who may be dealing with grief or illness?
Dealing with grief or
illness.
Illness. To remember that this is not the end.
Right.
It's not the end. Whatever it is, whatever power you can tap into, definitely tap into it. If you believe in God, that is definitely going to be your one and only source.
Absolutely.
Of strength. Of wisdom, of knowledge, all of it.
Yeah.
He encompasses everything that you are going to need to get through the grief, to get through the illness. Faith, hope, I would say. Faith, and perseverance.
Right.
I would definitely, no matter how hard it is, just push through it. Just push through it. Because you're going to empower someone. You're definitely going to change someone's life. And it is to your own life. Yeah. But if you just hold on to those things, you'll make it. You'll make it. And and to remember that God is with you. He is not going to leave you. Yes, it's hard. Life is not fair. But God will give you the strength you need to get through it. And he will use you to grow you, to point you into the direction that he needs for you to go in. But he will definitely see you through.
Yeah. Absolutely. Where would you say you are mentally on a scale of 1 to 10? 1 being the worst place, 10 being the best place.
I would say I'll give myself an 8.
Okay.
You know? And the only reason why I'll give myself an 8 is because, you know, I'm still grieving.
Yeah.
I know for me, we've lost a lot. We've in the past 5 years.
We've lost a lot of people.
We've lost a lot of people. And to this day, 5 years later, I'm still grieving.
Yeah.
And when it comes to, going back to that, I'm still grieving. I'm still experiencing those emotions that is associated with grief. I just lost my uncle, you know? And that was just like reliving my father's passing over again. because he just meant that much to me.
Right.
So I'm definitely experiencing those emotions associated with grief. And when it comes to illness, I'm not going to lie, I always ask myself, is it going to come back? You know, yeah. I don't dwell on it. I don't dwell on it. But just because you have completed the treatments, it still goes on.
Right.
You know, it still, it doesn't just stop. It doesn't just stop. You know, I think I speak for every individual that's battling a disease and is a survivor of that thing. You definitely wonder, you know, is it going to come back? But you definitely just, that's where that hope, that's where that, you know, that faith and that perseverance, you know, comes through. You know, you take what you learned and you just, you go through life with those things, just those life lessons that my father gave me growing up. You know, I'm applying that to my daily life now, you know.
Right.
So you take those lessons and you just persevere, you know, and you do it with class and you do it with grace, and it's okay to not be okay, you know. So yes, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that's definitely my favorite thing to tell anybody that's you know, going through or in a rough time. It's just like, you know, it's okay not to be okay. It's okay to cry, laugh, scream, whatever it is you have to do to get it out and to get through it. You do that thing and do it unapologetically, because people who truly love you and care for you understand that, you know, if it's best for you, to allow you to do that and just be there when you need them. That's it.
Yes.
So that's my question. Those are my things that I had to ask. Thank you for taking some time out and sitting down, having a conversation with me. Do you have any last words that you would like to leave with the listeners and viewers?
No. I just want to say thank you for inviting me. Thank you for thinking of me, you know, to do this. And I just want to say I'm just so proud of you, you know, cousin to cousin. Yeah. I am just so proud of you. All of your accomplishments and what you're doing, and, you know, how much you just have so much compassion for your community.
Yeah,
I truly, truly respect that. And I'm just so proud of you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, that is the show. I thank you so much for joining me. Have a wonderful night. This is Black, Bold, and Beautiful, the Cultures Podcast. And as always, be encouraged, stay encouraged, and don't forget to encourage someone.